Neve Solicitors are proud to sponsor The Parent Show. The friendly team at Neve's includes specialists who can guide you through all the legal ups and downs of family life. Visit nevesolicitors.co.uk. Neve Solicitors, your complete legal solution.
And welcome to The Parent Show. Indeed, I'm Cathy Weston.
And I'm Shirley Heyman. So, tonight, we are going to be exploring a sensitive, yet we think quite an important topic actually for our local parents. So we were thinking about questions like, have you been trying to have a baby? Did you always assume it would just be one of those rites of passage? Have things turned out to be a little bit more prolonged and tricky than you expected in order to become a parent? It seems like in Hertfordshire, there's many people that are or have been coping with what we're terming tonight involuntary childlessness. And this is when really, you know, becoming a mum or dad is a delayed experience or actually even ends up being denied us.
And joining the discussion on this week's Parent Show, our guests are going to be Karen Vaness from Infertility Network UK. They actually have a support group in St Albans. Russell Davis from The Fertile Mind, who is a successful fertility hypnotherapist, author, speaker and coach. And Jenny Hunt, the senior infertility specialist counsellor from the Hammersmith Hospital. And lastly, a local parent, Rebecca, who very generously is going to share her first and experience of this issue.
So we're hoping that we've got Jenny on the line straight away because we've got a packed show tonight. Jenny, hi, are you there?
I am indeed. Hello there.
Good evening. Thanks so much for joining us and giving up your time. So, Jenny, first of all, can we just ask you to briefly give our listeners, you know, a sort of resume of what your experience role is in this subject? You know, what do you know about it?
I've been working as a specialising in counselling people who have fertility issues for the last 30 years, both in Australia and then mostly in the UK. So I run a counselling service at IVF Hammersmith in London, yeah, which is part of Hammersmith Hospital, and have a private practice in Hertfordshire.
Okay, thanks very much. So, you know, sort of very well versed in the kind of things we want to talk about tonight. First of all, I just wanted to ask you, you know, do we talk about fertility treatment or infertility treatment? What do your sort of patients and clients prefer people to use? Which term?
It's a really hard word, infertility. Mm. I think amongst people, you know, who work in this area, we use both. Because both are relevant. As you know, there are fertility issues because people are trying to have a family, and there are infertility issues because it's difficult. I'm sure it's much easier for people to deal with the word fertility,
yeah,
you know, the issues around fertility rather than infertility, because that's the negative side.
Yeah.
Jenny, when people come to you, at what stage are they at? Have they given up hope? Are they seeking advice in the early stages if they find out it may be taking longer than usual?
Do you know, people come at any point in time. It's when they're beginning to realise how hard this is. So I really welcome people coming, whether they are, you know, just embarking on trying to have a family and there's been a few months that have gone by without it happening, or, you know, they've really hit a crisis point when they've been through a lot of treatment cycles, but at any stage in between, you know, it's just when, you know, it comes up as realizing that this is much bigger than the normal things they handle in life, and it would be a real help to have some extra support.
Okay, and you know, we were just wondering, and when we were researching this, we haven't done masses of research, but I mean, you would know, is there any research on fertility, infertility itself, and sort of gives us some idea about the regions where it's the highest in the UK, or, you know, why does it seem to be so prevalent now that people are struggling to conceive?
I'm not the person to, I haven't really got information about whether,
right,
there's differences between regions. And it's an interesting question about whether there's any increase in fertility issues for people. It's much more, there's much more awareness about it. Maybe it wasn't so talked about if you went back 50 years or so ago. But after all, you know, if you go back through history, people have had fertility issues and and that people have been seeking, you know, to have children through adoption. So I'm not sure the statistics really show there's been such an increase, but it's certainly a massive problem for people, anyone who does encounter it.
And Jenny, we know that, we can understand that people who are having difficulty conceiving might feel low and depressed, but how else does the experience of infertility affect them psychologically? And also, does it affect partners as well as mum?
Well, mums isn't quite the right word. You know, these are people who are trying to become parents, and it affects both. I think in my experience that both men and women are incredibly affected. It may happen at different stages. One person may be feeling more optimistic at one point than the other. But there's no doubt about it. Men are just as affected. If they want to have a family, it's a tremendous threat to their future and their hopes and dreams. There are issues around loss. I think that's very often not realised. You know, there's just loss of expectations and body image and hope and just being like your friends who they are often all happily having their children quite easily around the person who's struggling to have a child.
So from what you're saying, Jenny, it might be equivalent to the experience of grief or bereavement.
It's definitely a source of grief and bereavement. We suffer it over small things in life. If you lose something that you're fond of, you have feelings of grief, and obviously these escalate as the importance of what you've lost, increases. And when it comes to not being able to have children or being threatened with the idea of not having children, that is absolutely core to people's lives, completely fundamental. And I think one of the greatest sources of grief that any individual or couple can experience.
So would you say that, you know, the potential father needs a different type of support to the potential mother, or, you know, does one partner need a different type of support to the other?
Yeah, well, I think that's interesting. And it's certainly, and these are huge generalisations, and I'm sure lots of guys out there will say, I'm not like this at all.
Right.
But there are, that do in general tend to be slightly different ways in which men and women cope with life issues. Women are much more likely to process things by wanting to talk them through,
mm-hmm.
and share feelings about them, whereas, you know, for a lot of guys, what they want to do is try and fix it, and they want actually more tangible things to try and do, and they be less inclined to really be talking about how they're feeling. And that can be a source of difficulty in a relationship when people are dealing with things differently.
I mean, from some of the conversations I've had with people that have been through this, they were saying that, you know, it does affect their sex life, really, because you're making love for one reason. Do you find that's something that you have to get involved with, you know, talking
yes.
to couples about that?
Yes, it's one of the more difficult things for them to admit to, but honestly, it's almost inevitable, isn't it?
Yeah.
But, you know, you start out a relationship where, the intimate part of your relationship is fun. And it's spontaneous, and it's got nothing to do with having children. And then suddenly, it starts to become something that you have to do, and you have to time it, and all the fun and joy goes out of it, and that isn't good for a couple. It affects them in all sorts of ways.
Jenny, if there are potential dads listening or potential mums, what is your best advice in terms of for each of them to support the other, and also what best advice could you give to friends who are watching a couple go through this? What are the things to say and not to say?
Well, I think in terms of a couple, you know, having just talked about differences, that one of the things that can help is to understand, you know, that you can be different, and it's okay to be different, and however much you might want your partner to be feeling what you're feeling, maybe they don't, and maybe it is different for them. And so, first of all, you know, understanding and being able to accept that your partner is doing this differently, but also making sure that you make time just to be there and listen to each other, be there for each other, is probably one of the most wonderful things that can happen, and it's hard when you're both hurting. The same really applies for people around an individual or a couple. Just trying to be sensitive to what their needs are rather than you know what your needs are. So it's Christmas coming up, and that's a really really tough time for people who have been trying to have children for a while. They long to be able to be sharing Christmas with a child or to be expecting a child. So it can be so painful. And, for people around that individual couple, just be sensitive to the fact they may not be able to cope with coming to a family Christmas, may not be able to cope with family events where people are enjoying family life with children.
Thank you, Jenny. That's really sensitive kind of advice and, sharing your experience with us. I mean, if people needed to get in touch with you through your private practice, is that something that, local people can do?
Yes, indeed they can. I mean, what I would say, because there are other counsellors also who can be available, there's a really helpful website, which is the British Infertility Counselling Association. And the web address is BICA, which is BICA.net, and you can find a counsellor through that, and you'll find I'm listed there, as are a few other counsellors who can be accessible to people.
Okay, well, thank you so much for joining us and sharing your knowledge and experience with us tonight.
Yes, well, all the best also to people who are listening tonight.
Thank you. Okay, thanks you so much, Jenny.
Thank you.
Okay,
good night. Welcome back to The Parents Show. We've just been speaking to Jenny, and now our next guest, hopefully on the phone, is Karen from Infertility Network UK. Good evening, Karen.
Hi, I'm here.
Hi, lovely to speak to you. Just tell us, first of all, what is Infertility Network UK, and, is it local? Is it something that can support our local parents?
Yes, it is. We are the UK's largest patient charity that supports anybody that's struggling to conceive. And in your area, in Hertfordshire, there's a group that meets on the first Wednesday of the month at 8 o'clock at the Ginger Natural Health at London Road in St Albans. Anyone can go along, and I've got a contact number if you're happy for me to give that out, if anyone would like to go along and contact Susie, the volunteer helper, yes.
We can put that on our Facebook page, so do give that. Thank you.
So, yes, we're here for everybody. We lobby on behalf of people that are struggling to get funding for the treatment that they need, so we can help with that.
Okay.
And that's really important because I'm not sure how much your listeners will know, but the NICE guideline that sets out what the government recommends for infertility treatment is very uneven across the country. So it really depends on where you live as to what you get. And I'm not sure there's a lot of people realise that until the time comes when sadly they may need some help, and then they start looking into it. And some people realise that then where they live isn't offering what the guideline recommends. And that's really important.
Yeah. Well, Karen, how do we do locally? I mean, where do we stand in terms of
opportunities? Well, I've just been looking, actually. And if I'm right, I think you're covered by the Heart Valley Clinical Commissioning Group, is that right?
Yes.
Now, your listeners are quite fortunate because at the moment the policy that's in place, the local policy that's in place, offers three full cycles, which is exactly what the guideline says for eligible couples aged between 23 and 39. There is a stipulation, though, that neither partner can have any previous children.
Right.
Now, that's not actually part of the NICE guideline recommendation. That's a locally implemented criteria, if you like. But compared to a lot of the country, where I live in the Midlands, for example, there's one cycle. We just got offered one cycle, regardless. So you are better off than many.
It may explain, I think, why Hertfordshire has the highest number of twin and triplet births in Britain. It may be that we're an exciting hub, a place to come for treatment and support. Karen, can you just explain, if you're over 40 and you're listening and you're trying to conceive, what options are available to you and what support?
Oh, goodness. Well, the NICE guideline was adapted a few months ago in February this year, and there was extra provision put in for females aged 39 to 42. The problem or the issue with that, though, is that in order to qualify, if you are aged between 39 and 42, which is obviously higher than the age limit before, there are very specific criteria that they have set, and you can't have, for example, received any sort of IVF treatment before. So although they have extended, if you like, the guideline a little bit, it's only going to apply to a few people. So for the most part, I'm being very general here, but for the most part, once you get to 39, your options, certainly on the NHS, are extremely limited.
So I'm just wondering, so after you get to, what did you say, to 42, that one now
goes
to?
Well, yes, I mean, the guideline for females is that the broad guideline is 23 to 39, and there are stipulations within that in terms of BMI is one criteria, for example.
Yeah.
The guideline was extended a little bit back in February, but it was only for a very small percentage of females who hadn't or have never had any sort of intervention, any sort of assisted conception. Mm. And for the majority of people, by the time you get to 39 or 40, you're probably going to have started down the route anyway. So what I'm saying is, although the provision has been extended, it's not going to catch a lot of people in those extra 3 years. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, that's very clear. Mm. Thank you. So when does your charity help people where they've been through their cycles and their treatment and actually, sadly, you know, they haven't had a child doing it this way? And then what happens to those people? Do they just disappear, or do you still support them?
No, they don't disappear. I was one of them. We don't disappear.
Right.
yes, we have. One of the amazingly unique services that we offer is we have a trained nurse counsellor, Diane, and she's available for anybody to pick the phone up and ring. And she is an extremely wise, lovely, knowledgeable lady. And she can talk through any aspect of treatment, and she talks to people who've had a failed cycle, because that's the absolute rubbish bit when you come down to earth with a very horrible bump, and then you have to pick yourself up and decide if you're going to have another go, whether you're going to have another go on the NHS, or if that's not an option for you because you're not covered, for example, whether you start thinking about how you're going to fund the next go. So Diane is there, and I wish more people knew about her, because she's an amazing lady, and she's there to help, and she listens.
Okay, so Hertfordshire, Diane is there for you. She sounds fantastic.
She is, and there's a helpline number I'll
yes,
give out.
Yes, please give it,
And people can call her, and she can give some really sound advice. Because, I mean, IVF is a absolute emotional roller coaster. From the time you're sat in front of your GP and told that, sadly, you may well have a problem, you know, your life just changes, and it doesn't really go back to normal until hopefully one day you end up with the child that you so long for. Mm. But the time in between, however long that time is, isn't great.
No. So the people that are working in your network,
yeah.
I mean, how do they empathise with the people that are coming in? Have they been through this process themselves, or, you know, are they nurses?
Most people have. I personally have.
Right.
And I decided to take this job on because I thought I had a vague chance of understanding how people feel. And there's nothing worse when you're going through something dreadful for someone to say, you know, I know how you feel, when they don't. And I do know what it feels like. I know how it feels to be told you'll possibly never have a child and to go through the grueling process of IVF. And we are very lucky. We did come out the other side, and we have two girls. And I will never forget what that was like. And I speak to people every day. People share their stories. There's a huge amount of kind of peer support. through the forums and through our very active Facebook
site. Fantastic.
And I, what I would say is it is really good to talk about it and to find somebody else that can just say, do you know, I feel like that too. I'm having a rubbish day.
Mm.
So you don't have to pretend, and you don't have to present this, you know, kind of, you know, stiff upper lip to the rest of the world, which I think is something that we all do. It's something I did. And it's very easy for me to say now it's good to talk, but it does help,
yeah.
I feel.
Yeah, absolutely. Can we just ask you to give out those numbers that you kindly said you'd give to the listeners? Do you have them there?
I do. There's a couple of numbers, actually. The first one is there's a free phone number for the office staff, which is 0800 008 7464. And if you, that's a free phone, but I don't think it's free from a mobile. So the best number for everything, if it's a landline, it's 01424 731 858, and that will get access all of our services, including Diane.
Okay, thank you. Well, thank you ever so much for joining us, Karen, and for sharing some of your experiences and your daily work with us. So we're very grateful.
I'll happy to put all this information. I'll send you as much as you want for it. You can pass on to your listeners for the website.
Brilliant.
Okay. Thank you for having me on.
Thank you.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
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 The Parents Show on 92.6 FM Radio Verulam.
Radio Verulam. Hopefully we're joined by Russell Davies now from The Fertile Mind. Are you there, Russell?
I am here.
And just to put it in context, you're a successful fertility hypnotherapist, author, speaker and coach. And indeed, I think you work closely with the Infertility Network UK.
That's right, yes. So, I'm a cognitive hypnotherapist specialising in fertility. And that's partly because my wife and I had 10 years of a infertility journey, and looking back, we can really see, or I can see, we both can see how our minds played such a part in our journey. So I know I work with women all over the country and all over the world, helping them find a sense of peace of mind on their journey, whether they're trying to conceive naturally or through treatment.
Russell, tell us a little bit more about the psychological impact of experiencing infertility, and even if you end up with children, if you're lucky enough at the end of those procedures and interventions, you're still recovering from such a traumatic experience, presumably.
Absolutely, and I think a lot of people don't understand the depth of distress that can be caused by infertility. There was a study by Harvard University that demonstrated the stress levels of women going through infertility were equivalent to those with AIDS, cancer and heart disease.
Gosh.
And no one tells those kind of patients just to relax, it will be okay.
Yes.
So it is a huge level of distress that can be caused by infertility. And the study in Sweden showed that the distress levels was the number one reason why couples stopped treatment, even ahead of medical advice. It was the stress of the experience that stopped couples going through the treatment. And even if couples are successful, it can be an ongoing impact on individuals and the relationship. There's an awful lot of couples out there who have been successful, but then their relationship hasn't survived. I think people underestimate the stress that, for individuals and the couples, and how that stress can impact a relationship ongoing.
Yeah, I mean, certainly, Russell, that was one of our questions. Were there any long-term psychological outcomes for, you know, for couples where they had fertility treatment and ended up with children or not? I mean, I've seen that actually with you know, friends in life where the couples actually split up after it.
Yeah,
you know,
I've met many couples, and helped couples who are exactly that situation where they've been successful or not. Some have been successful, some aren't successful, but they would cite that the stress of the journey was one of the reasons why their relationship didn't survive.
Yeah. I mean, do you have any kind of advice or tips that you could give us if we're watching friends and family going through treatments? You know, what could we do to support them? Or is there anything?
First thing is don't just tell them to relax.
Yes.
Couples are fed up with just hearing, oh, relax, everything will be okay.
Yeah.
I think it's just seeking to understand how they feel without giving advice. Because a lot of things, people who haven't been through the experience, it's very hard for them to understand what it's like when couples are in the experience. So I guess it's just seeking to understand as best you can. And if you don't understand why they're reacting in the way they are, then don't judge that, but just seek to understand what's going on for them. And even if secondary fertility is an example where a lot of people say, well, you've got one, what's your problem? Actually, even secondary fertility can be just as stressful as primary infertility. So it's just seeking to understand what it's like for that couple as they go through it. And recognising it is extremely, as mentioned before, it is like grief. It's like going through a grief cycle, but regularly, if you're trying to conceive naturally, it can be a monthly kick in the teeth. It can be a monthly kind of grieving process. Or if you're going through treatment, it can be such an emotional and financial investment that suddenly, if it's not successful, and that's ongoing because people often go through more than one cycle. So it's not just one grieving process. It's a continual grieving process with, and they call it the infertility roller coaster, because in between all that, there's highs and lows. There's always hopes. And false dawns, and you're crashing down to this despair. So it is an exhausting kind of a roller coaster.
Russell, you've mentioned sort of sympathetic responses and unsympathetic responses from friends and family. And as you say, people have no idea what to say. Mm. They might feel awkward about inviting the couple to a children's birthday party or involving them in family events. They just sort of, you know, are always feeling stressed themselves about how to manage it. Mm. I mean, I think you've mentioned a couple of unsympathetic responses, like just relax, or you've got one of your own, or you can always adopt that type of thing. Mm. What would you say are the most, you've mentioned a few things, but the how can we be very sympathetic? What sort of, literally, what kind of words are meaningful to people going through that you can use as a friend?
I think one thing to say is, you can say, I can't imagine what it's like, because you can't really, unless you've kind of been through it. Just recognising that, I can't imagine what it's like. And say, just to recognise, we're here for you if you want to talk. And I wouldn't say avoid inviting them to things, because I mean, our experience moment to moment on a journey, or experience in anything in life, is created by our thinking in that moment. So some people going through the journey can feel okay about it and be okay to go to birthday parties or baby showers and things like that. And then one minute they feel very different because our thinking changes moment to moment. It's not the circumstances that creates our emotional response. It's our thinking about the circumstances in that moment, which can change from time to time. You can't second guess what someone's thinking or what their emotional response is going to be to an invite or something like that. So we wouldn't avoid doing those things, but just be sympathetic if they suddenly don't turn up, or they say they decline. Just, and don't try and second guess what's going on. Just try and be sympathetic and understanding, and rather than kind of making assumptions or judgments about what it's like for them.
And Russell, people might be thinking, how on earth could therapy help? What could cognitive behavioural therapy possibly achieve?
Well, I do cognitive hypnotherapy. Therapy. It's quite different to CBT. But and kind of coaching. I help people basically, as I said, our thinking creates our experience in that moment rather than the circumstances themselves. So I help people essentially let go of the stories they tell themselves in their heads, the stories that it's not going to work for us, or the stories that I'm never going to find peace or fulfillment or happiness without a child. Just letting go of all these stories in people's heads that create these unhelpful experiences. And when we let go of all that, when we tune into something deeper, our intuition, our innate health is always within us, you find more of a sense of peace of mind on the journey. So that's one aspect. The other aspect is our mind and body are one system. So we can actually utilize that mind-body link. And I've had women who don't ovulate or don't have regular periods, all sorts of medical, biological circumstances that suddenly start ovulating and having a biologic, different or more helpful biological response by utilizing that kind of mind-body link. So it's letting go of unhelpful experiences and thinking and beliefs, but also actively harnessing that mind-body link for to basically guide the body to what you want it to do.
So if any of our listeners wanted to get in touch with you, Russell, how can they tell us?
The best way is through my website, which is thefertilemind.net, thefertilemind.net, and they can feel free to contact me through there,
Okay, thank you. I just wondered, do you think, we were asking one of the other contributors about this, do you think that the dad in this needs particular support? Do you work with dads as well?
It's interesting how up to 50% of infertility cases involve male fertility as well as female fertility, either exclusively or joint. But you find that 99% of times the women who seek kind of support or emotional help So I very actually get a chance to work with the dads, but having been through it myself, both we went through female and male fertility, I absolutely think, yeah, that there is a need for the supporting men through this process. Yeah.
And Russell, if anyone's listening, maybe they don't want to go to face-to-face counselling, if you like, a man, I'd say, say potential dad. Mm. I mean, how can he engage online or find peer support online?
There is quite a few kind of online forums for men, and actually most of my support, most of my coaching is done actually over the phone, so I often don't meet the people I'm working with. So there is a way of doing it where you're not actually having to do face-to-face, and some men prefer that kind of little bit of distance where having just a phone call rather than face-to-face in a room. But there are also online support forums for men. If they just Google, you know, male fertility support, they'll find those support forums.
That's brilliant. That's very helpful.
Yeah, Russell, thank you so much for giving up your time tonight and chatting.
You're welcome. So, I'm glad you're talking about it, because one of the things is getting people to be aware of this. Infertility is such an unspoken about thing. My wife and I were very open about, oh, infertility, we agreed what we'd say, and people were quite shocked when we said, oh, aren't you having children? We'd say, actually, we're not sure we can. Getting out there and getting more people talking about it, because up to 25% of couples struggle with infertility, but it's just not talked about.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much for all the work you're doing.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Take care, Russell.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. And welcome back. We're talking about infertility this evening on The Parent Show. We're joined now by a local mum who very, very bravely is going to talk us through her first-hand experience of this issue. How are you, Rebecca?
I'm fine, thank you.
Thank you for joining us.
That's okay.
I think we've been talking a lot about the impact psychologically that the experience of having difficulty to conceive can have, and also the value of peer support, of seeking perhaps a counsellor. Tell us a little bit about your journey. You had a very happy ending, fortunately, and conceived your child. But tell us a little bit about the journey of your five rounds of IVF and how you coped.
Okay, well, initially, we assumed that I was going to be absolutely fine, as you do, and we knew my husband had a problem with not very motile sperm, but the doctor said, oh, give it a go, you know, you've got to keep trying, it might happen. So we tried for about 18 months and nothing happened. I then went to a private clinic and had a full check, and they said, yes, you're absolutely fine, maybe we should try IVF, which we did. So we sort of embarked on our first round of IVF, very full of confidence.
And Rebecca, can I just stop you there? You know, when you go for these checks and they say you're fine, but you've been trying for 18 months, I mean, how does it feel to make that very concrete decision to move towards IVF? How do you know not to give up hope of conceiving naturally? Do you just take medical advice?
You do just take medical advice, and we assumed that IVF was the logical next step. We weren't willing to give up. We knew that we might have difficulty conceiving naturally because of my husband's, you know, sperm speed. So it was just the natural step, and it was just a case of making sure we had enough money to go for the first round, which we did. Everything seemed to be absolutely fine all the way through. Then you have the embryos implanted. Then you have that awful two-week wait where you're literally left completely on your own waiting to do the pregnancy test 2 weeks later.
So completely nerve-wracking.
You feel pregnant. Everything about you feels pregnant. You then get up at 6 o'clock in the morning to do your pregnancy test, and it's negative, and you just can't understand it.
And tell us a little bit, for people who may be contemplating IVF, what is it actually? I mean, is it painful to go through that procedure of having eggs implanted? I mean, obviously we're...
The only, I wouldn't say it's painful. Obviously, you have to inject yourself every day, or your partner or somebody injects you every day, which you have to build that into your 5 or 6 week life, because you have to do it at the same time every day. So you can't do it at 7:30 every night if you think you might go out for dinner. because it's not the most appropriate thing to be doing. And then I would say the worst bit is when they actually harvest the eggs from you and they have to put you under. You can have it done when you're under a local, but they don't advise it. And that can be a little bit uncomfortable because they are going inside and scraping the eggs from you. And then it's not too bad. And when they put the embryos back in you, that's not unpleasant at all. For women, it's just, you know, it's like having a smear, basically. It's not that unpleasant. The worst bit is the waiting to do the pregnancy test.
Yeah. And how did you cope with the first round of waiting?
The first round of waiting, it was quite exciting because you think you are pregnant because you feel pregnant because you don't understand that the drugs that you're taking make your body think you're pregnant because it's preparing your body to have an embryo implanted into the uterus. So for the first time, you're a little bit naive. It's when you go on to have second rounds that you realise that whatever you're feeling could be a feeling of the embryo implanting or a feeling of the embryo being expelled from you.
Rebecca, how long do you have to wait between, say, the first cycle doesn't work and then going for the next one? Can you literally go the next month?
It all depends on your cycle because you then have to go back on some form of pill to regulate your cycle and then you have to come off it. So in my first year, we had two rounds. We had one in April and one in September.
Yeah.
And that was nearly enough, the quickest that we could do it, bearing in mind that you have to have a window of about 8 weeks free.
Oh, okay.
Where you're not going anywhere major, doing anything major, because you have to go back to the clinic every 2-3 days to have scans in the first 5 or 6 weeks.
And were you working during this time?
I was working, and I was fortunate that my employers were very understanding.
Okay.
And would allow me to take the time off that I needed to, and I was quite happy to tell people that we were going through that process.
So would you recommend people do share it with their employer?
I mean, I think you have to, because you do have to have quite a bit of time off work. So I guess it's no different to informing your boss that you're actually pregnant and you have to go for your scans.
Right.
I don't believe they cannot let you go for these appointments. I'm not sure my boss was fine with it.
And Rebecca, tell us a little bit, as time went on, obviously a desperate experience, a cruel taster of pregnancy, if you like, being on those drugs, and then to be disappointed, presumably the sense of disappointment is profound and you just have to find a way through that as a couple.
Yeah, I was very upset. My husband was very angry. He couldn't work out. He said he was banging his fist on the table. He said, this isn't right. Everything was right. It felt right. You looked right. Couldn't understand it. But we were also told, you know, go again. You know, things aren't brilliant with the quality of your eggs. That was the first sign they gave me a clue that it could have been me that had a bit of an issue as well. But they said, go again. So we did. We were just, you know, you hear people being successful on the second time, and we thought it would happen the second time.
So you said you did it 5 times, is
we
that
did,
right?
Yeah.
So, you know, at any point during your journey, did you just want to say, I can't do this anymore?
I was never going to give up, but they did tell me after my third round that we had a less than 5% chance
gosh.
Of being successful because of the quality of my eggs and also because my husband had this low motility problem with the sperm. They asked us to consider having donor eggs, having donor sperm.
And tell us a little bit about that. I mean, how do people even... what does it involve?
It depends. If you want to go down the donor egg route, you can either go to the bank. There's a bank that you can become part of. You join, you pay to join it. And there can be up to a year, 2 year waiting list.
Wow.
Because they have to make sure that they're trying to match you appropriately. You can have a member of family donate an egg to the bank on your behalf, which then puts you up the list.
Well, that's a great tip, isn't it?
Or you find a donor yourself.
And is that something you pursued?
We considered it, and we did get a donor lined up, and everything was going smoothly, and she came off her contraception, and then, cruelly for me, but not for her, she fell pregnant.
Oh,
obviously,
gosh.
Because, you know, that was the circumstances, so we thought, okay... let's give it another go ourselves, which we did. And that was our fourth try, which again failed. So the fifth time we did use a donor, and that's why we were successful.
So are you willing to share what happened in the end with us?
Yeah.
You know, you've got son?
Yes, got a little boy. Yeah. He's 3 years old. It was very exciting. Mm. This girl that donated to was, you know, was wonderful.
Yeah.
You have counselling. You know, they have counselling. You have counselling. You discuss what you're going to do in the future about telling the child and what you want to do with any other eggs that are the embryos that are saved. Yeah. Then our little boy was born, and it was wonderful. And then you forget all the pain that's been before.
You do you?
You do. Well, I have done.
Yeah, that's great.
I choose to talk about it.
Yeah.
To me, it got me through all the failed cycles. Mm. All my friends knew we were trying. They did not include me in things that were happening. All my friends fell pregnant before I did, even though I started trying earlier. Mm. I find talking about it makes it a lot easier.
So great celebrations then when your son came along.
Absolutely.
And a very special baby, no doubt, too.
Very much. Very much.
Yeah. Awesome.
And Rebecca, what other things kept you going? You've mentioned, you know, your friends were supportive, and obviously you must be a very upbeat person.
Someone told me when we first started, they'd had 8 or 9 rounds over 11 years, and they ended up with twins, and they just said, don't give up. There's always a way. It might not be the most straightforward way, but there's always a way if you want to be a parent somehow. And I never got to the point where I'd exhausted all the avenues.
Right, so you're willing to research, to find out what was open to you. I have to say, it's very disheartening to hear that so much money might be involved.
It's very, very expensive, and we were very fortunate that we managed to save enough money each time to pay for it. Because the one thing we said is we wouldn't get into debt trying to do it.
Mm. I think it's an important consideration for people to, you know, how much is a round of IVF if you have to pay for it?
Round about, I mean, it's different in different parts of the country, but it cost us in total about £7,000 per round.
Right.
That included buying the drugs, because the drugs are on top of, you know, the fees that you pay to the clinic.
Right.
But you can shop around as well and get your drugs cheaper. We spoke to our local chemist who helped us out with that, rather than using the people that the clinics use, which obviously charge a premium for them.
Yeah, that's a great tip as well. Okay, and Rebecca, just for anyone who's going through this particular experience at the minute, have you got any best advice?
I would say don't give up. I would say don't isolate yourself from friends who have children, because there's nothing worse than being completely left on your own when everyone's doing their parenting thing and you're not. And I'd just be positive. I think that's the only way through it.
Well, we're very glad you've had a happy ending.
Yes. Thank you.
And very much so, you know, very grateful that you've shared your happy story with us on the Parent Show. So thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rebecca.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Welcome back to the Parents Show. We really hope you found all those guests useful and helpful. And don't forget, there will be a podcast up in a while for you to listen to if you want to listen back to that or share that information with somebody.
And don't forget, you can follow us on Facebook. Please go on there and see all the different things that we've got on our Facebook page. All the resources from tonight will be flagged up. We're on Twitter at Parents Show. And lastly, of course, all our podcasts are lovingly created by Neil Brearley, and they're on iTunes. So go to iTunes, search for Radio Viral and Parent Show, and at that point you'll find lots of there's about 99 shows listed at any one time. We couldn't possibly go into all of them now, but that resource is there for you. It's free, and we'd love you to use it. Also, we just wanted to say, if any of you have any topic suggestions for the Parent Show, please get in touch with us. You can do it anonymously. You don't have to be involved in the show if you don't like, but if there's a parenting issue or theme that you'd, or a question that you'd like us to find some experts around, do get in touch. You can do that by emailing us parentsshow@radioverulam.com, or you can find us on Facebook.
Neave Solicitors are proud to sponsor the Parent Show. The friendly team at Neave's includes specialists who can guide you through all the legal ups and downs of family life. Visit neavesolicitors.co.uk. Neave Solicitors, your complete legal solution.